content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from National Geographic, The News and Observer, and AAA Go Magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, our itinerary is a potpourri of fun. First is a quick zip to the market. Now, this article is written by Fritz Hoffman. He's a photographer who chronicles a traditional way of life by a powerful river and threatened by change. His story is from the February 2021 issue of National Geographic. The Salween River, known as the New in China, is one of the last great free-flowing rivers in Asia. Nearly two decades ago, China announced it would dam the New. Multiple ethnic groups live in this part of southwestern China, which is called Three Parallel Rivers for the New. That's the Jinsha, or Yangtze, and the Lankan, or Mekong, rivers that flow through it, and it's been named a UNESCO World Heritage Site for its rich biodiversity. In 2008, I traveled there to tell the story of this remote region before it was permanently altered. I found that there was very little bottomland along the New. Villages hid high above the steep walls of the river's gorge. A road clung to one side. Few bridges spanned the river. I saw locals crossing by zip line, thick steel cables attached to the sides of the ravine, one for each direction. People carried a rope and pulley looped to their belt or slung over their shoulder, ready to hitch to the cables and zip across. While photographing the area, I mapped the locations of all the cable crossings and observed the landscape in the light. The gorge, narrow and deep, was often in dark shadows. I studied people zipping across, flying over the churning waters of the New. The word, by the way, means angry in Chinese. They did it alone, in pairs, and with animals. I saw chickens, pigs, and a goat. I located the zip line closest to a town and headed there on market day with my assistant, Chun Jinhua, and our driver, Zhu Linwen, both members of the Linsu minority. A steady stream of people were already making the crossing. I rented a harness and pulley from one of them. With a camera around my neck and film in my pocket, I hooked the pulley onto the return cable and eased forward until I reached midway above the river. The waters did look angry. Dangling over the New, I photographed people crossing until those waiting to return home became impatient with me. I pulled myself back to the roadside to let them pass and then hooked onto the cable again for another try. After a morning hanging from the cable and making pictures from the riverbank, I decided to wrap it up. As we loaded the car, we scanned the high ridges opposite us. A group of people were heading down the steep trail. Jinhua called out, "They have a cow!" I dug out a seldom-used telephoto lens and looked to the ridgetop. Indeed, there was a cow and a goat as well. The path split in two directions. I held my breath as we watched the group descend. Lin Wen thumbed prayer beads. Jinhua recited a prayer in the Linsu dialect. When the people with the cow chose the path toward the cable crossing, a shot of adrenaline made my toes tingle. "What's the angle?" I asked myself as I raced along the riverbank. I needed the river waters in the composition, but that was a tough thing to do. Before I could check all the possibilities, the group was at the cable, and Nan Boy above, and this is him pictured here, smiling back when he finally does take the photo, he was zipping across confidently. His family tied a rope sling around the cow, hooked it onto the pulley, and gave the animal a push toward us. Flailing its legs as it became airborne, the cow zipped down the steep angle of the cable but lost momentum where the line flattened out. It dangled there kicking, its lows of distress audible above the river's roar. Boy pulled himself hand over hand back to the cow. Once there, the Lisu villager spun himself around, locked his ankles around the cow's harness, and began hauling himself and the cow back up the road. I reached the cable's end just as Boy and the cow closed in. For a fraction of a second, my camera was in Boy's face. The view was immediate and intimate, completed by the angry river below. Many years later, the dams had not yet been built, but this zip line has been replaced by a bridge. You can't tell whether he's actually scared or smiling for the camera, I will say that. But there's that poor cow dangling there, but he made it to safety eventually, just so you know. Well, if you take the time, you will learn that most communities, large and small, have favorite places to go. In Detroit, locals like the Rollercade. Now, Detroit Free Press writer Chanel Fritz reports that the Rollercade rink keeps Detroit skating culture going strong. Now, his story, published in the January 29th, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. The first 3 months of 2020 were leading Detroit's Rollercade roller rink into the most successful year it has experienced. The roller rink off Schaefer Highway in southwest Detroit on the way to Downriver had been increasing revenue over the last 5 years, with 2019 showing an 18% jump. Going into March, ticket sales were rising and the company had a 21% jump when it had to shut down at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. "I really did think it would be like 3 weeks at the most," said Kyle Black, the owner of the Rollercade. He said, "as about the length of the shutdown. I called some of the other rink owners, and they were pretty adamant in saying it was going to be longer than a few weeks. The last day that we were open was March 14th, 2020. We shut everything down. We threw out all our food, and I didn't know what we were going to be walking into." Luckily, Rollercade has an online store where it sells roller skates to customers across the country. Black credits the online store for saving the roller rink. In-person activity wasn't happening, and eventually its roller skate supply ran dry after people bought what it had, like the bicycle industry experienced in the early days of the pandemic, and because no products were coming from overseas. From August to late October of 2020, there was no revenue coming in. When the state allowed businesses like the roller rink to reopen, Black said many people had a desire to return to skate. Capacity was limited after the reopening in October. Following the second shutdown and reopening in December, customers gradually started returning to the rink. "It's been a little over 2 weeks now. We've seen the crowd get a little bit stronger and more frequent," said Black. "We're hoping by spring," and that's the summer of 2021, "that we can get a nice-sized crowd with the state orders, and that should build our business back up. I don't have any doubts that the people will come back, but the people have to feel safe. One of the biggest things is people not feeling safe, and that's understandable. All guests are required to wear a mask or face coverings upon entry, and Black said he always has a bottle of hand sanitizer ready for use. When walking into the brick building's double doors, visitors walk right onto the skating rink. The building is just as it was when it opened in the 1950s with small renovations along the way. Because of that, Black had planned to tear it down and rebuild. But the work that was supposed to take place in 2020 was stopped by COVID-19. Black says he's glad now that the renovation didn't happen when it was planned. If we had just done a major renovation or something like this, this would have been the worst thing ever to go through during a pandemic, he said. Rollercade's original owners were Black's grandparents, Leroy Folks and Johnny May Folks. They opened the skating rink to the public in January 9, 1955. Roller skating was one of the only recreational things to do, Black said, and was also one of the only Black recreational things to do in this area, especially during those times. As soon as kids were able to walk, many have found themselves learning how to skate at Rollercade. The tradition has been passed through many generations. Kids starting as young as 2 can be seen doing tricks, dances, and glides on the roller rink's original terrazzo flooring. Although things are different with adding a mask to the mix now, the roller rink's flashing lights and loud music allow skaters still to escape into the relaxing and fun recreational activity. "It's just a thrill, and with the music you can just vibe out," says Black. "It's such a technical thing, and you can only focus on skating while you're skating. Everything else you're kind of blacked out to, and you just get away from everything. It's therapeutic," he noted. Black said the skating culture is different than any other culture, especially in Detroit. He said he had a pair of skates on as soon as he was able to stand. "I can remember being young, and it was never a question about what I wanted to do. I always wanted to run the skating rink," he said. "It was just something that was instilled in me, and I was born with it." And still a great place to visit, isn't it? There you go. Well, when I was a teenager, one of my first summer jobs was working part-time at a place called Melody Park. Now, it was located off U.S. Highway 301. That's just outside of Wilson, North Carolina. It included a snack bar with an adjoining outdoor dance floor and had a live DJ or a band. And nearby was a miniature golf course, which was next door to an outdoor skating rink, and not too far away was a driving range. Now, most of the time, I was spinning records for the dancers or working the snack bar during breaks, but as I gained more experience, I sometimes found myself managing the skate rink, a task that required me to relearn how to roller skate. By the end of summer, I amazed myself at being able to roll out onto the rink and even to be able to skate backward when needed. Well, great memories, and I don't think I've ever tried roller skating since, by the way, just so you know. Well, with the spring of 2021 officially here, many of you no doubt may be planning a trip or two, with or without skates, now that we seem to be able to better handle the pandemic. Kathleen Alex Beaven of Oyster.com is going to offer us 8 underrated U.S. spots to put on our itinerary. This article appeared in the January 31st, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. If you're anything like us, you've already started gathering ideas on where to travel this year, and while there are plenty of big-ticket destinations worth a spot on your 2021 travel bucket list, we want to call out a few places that may have been overlooked. Whether you want to discover something new or spread the love, check out our list of the most underrated U.S. destinations to visit. And let me emphasize the word she says, underrated. Taos, New Mexico. Come here, and you'll still get the quirky art scene, snowy slopes, hatched chilies, and jaw-dropping landscapes found in Santa Fe, but at a lower price point and with fewer crowds. Taos is also loaded with active outdoor adventures, culture, and history, including the must-see Taos Pueblo, an impressive UNESCO World Heritage Site composed of multi-story adobe buildings. And one of the photographs accompanying the article shows this. It's kind of like a lot of the Western scenes you see from the Southwest. And I'm sure you would be very familiar with this one if you've covered that kind of material in the past. Well, next up, they want us to check out Indianapolis. Indianapolis has a lot going for it. And 2021 is set to be a big year for the Midwestern city. You can bet there will be big celebrations for the city's bicentennial, though we're not sure if anything can beat the excitement surrounding the world's largest single-day sporting event. That's the annual Indy 500 car race, which will celebrate its 105th run. Plus, the Children's Museum of Indianapolis, the largest children's museum in the world, has brought back over 15 tons of dinosaur bones from a recent dig in Wyoming, and its paleontology lab will be piecing them together all year long. And then we go to Buffalo, New York. A new emerging Buffalo is full of history and hip features. On the history side, Buffalo is practically an open-air museum for architecture fanatics, thanks to its collection of 20th-century buildings. While you're in town, check out the immigrant-owned food and shop startups at the West Side Bazaar, and you can get active with ziplining and wall climbing at Buffalo Riverworks, and then catch some live music at the historic Colored Musicians Club. Now we head out to the west in San Luis Obispo, California. California's Central Coast is a favorite getaway destination for folks who live in San Francisco or Los Angeles, but it's often overlooked by other travelers. You can find a laid-back wine country, a health-conscious community, outdoor adventures, and food and drink that'll take you back to local roots. Paso Robles has over 250 vineyards and 100 tasting rooms, making it an excellent low-key alternative to Napa Valley. You can also go kayaking in the Morro Bay National Estuary. Now, closer to home is Charlotte. Foodies will want to head straight to the new Optimus Hall, a mixed-use space with a lot of great restaurants and serving everything from hearty to healthy fare. The city is also brimming with great chef-led eateries, many of which have won or been semifinalists for the prestigious James Beard Award. The museums here, like the Mint Museum uptown, showcase emerging artists and explore territory not always seen in larger-scale institutions. NWE also loves Charlotte for its easy access to outdoor activities like whitewater rafting, hiking, and rock climbing. Moving on down to Fort Worth, Texas, Fort Worth is well worth exploring. In addition to its twice-daily cattle runs, the city has a growing music scene, Local museums have hosted exhibits from Monet, Renoir, and Takashi Murakami, while creative event spaces like Black House empower and support up-and-coming artists and musicians. Live music is very much a thing here, so grab some Texas barbecue, a cold beer, and soak in the local sounds. And then we have Houston. If Houston goes big when it comes to the science, culture, and diversity scenes, visit the Space Center Houston and NASA's Johnson Space Center to touch an actual piece of Mars, walk through life-size mock-ups of the International Space Station, learn how astronaut food has evolved, and see the meticulously restored mission control room. And then we have a final stop on our list here is Tampa, Florida. Tampa has been undergoing a snazzy transformation, giving the city a hip and contemporary edge it had otherwise been lacking. Two game changers were Armature Works, a 1910 warehouse space that was repurposed into a one-stop spot with co-working spaces, restaurants, bars, a neighborhood market, and more. And then there's Sparkman Wharf, where you'll find over 65,000 square feet of reimagined space sporting a beer garden full of Florida craft brews, shops, waterside views, and eateries from the city's best chefs. Or you can soak in the energy at an ice hockey, basketball, or football game during your visit. So some great underrated U.S. spots to put on your travel bucket list there. What do you think? Well, how about some more places to consider for your travel list? One that might appeal to you is Nashville, Tennessee. Yep. Despite the terrible Christmas time tragedy that left part of downtown Nashville in disarray due to a bombing, Music City has been recovering and remains alive and hopping. The editors of the winter 2021 issue of AAA Go magazine give us some highlights of what to expect if we visit Nashville. First, in the art scene, the Stony Gaze of Athena, a 42-foot-tall bronze-draped statue, greets visitors to the Parthenon. It's just a few minutes from downtown. Nashville's ode to the ancient Greek structure was originally built for Tennessee's 1897 Centennial Exposition. Athena wasn't added until 1990, after 8 years of work by renowned sculptor Alan LeGuire. Peruse the Parthenon's permanent collection of paintings by 19th and 20th century American artists. LeGuire is known for his sculpture Musica in the heart of Nashville's Music Row and several other works around town. See what's new at the First or Frist Center for the Visual Arts. Instead of a permanent collection, traveling exhibits rotate out every 6 to 8 weeks. And so there's Art Deco building, a former post office dating to the early 1930s. It's a masterpiece unto itself, and with a soaring two-story hallway, marble-filled tile floors, and mod aluminum grillwork, so the architecture's worth seeing alone, plus the rotating exhibits. Then we have a food scene. No matter your favorite meat or style of cooking, barbecue is a southern staple. At Martin's Barbecue Joint, it's all about West Tennessee-styled smoked whole hog, and it's mouth-wateringly good. Try it all, from a slaw-topped pulled pork sandwich, wow, that's a mouthful, to the saucy chicken wings, to the Mississippi farmed-raised catfish. Another southern supper favorite, fried chicken, gets a fiery twist in Nashville. Hot chicken, the city's signature dish, comes breaded and coated in lip-singeing, sinus-clearing spices. Ooh. Served alongside white bread and pickles. Now, Hattie B's dishes out heat levels ranging from southern, with no spice at all, to the crazy hot. Shut the clock up, is how they describe it. But the first name in Nashville hot chicken is Prince's Hot Chicken Shack, which just opened a second location in 2016 after more than 70 years in business. Diners beware, even the mild brings the heat. First-timers shouldn't even try ordering the hot. They won't sell it to you anyway. Ooh, that's got to be hot. Mm. Then we have shopping. Yes, packed with one-of-a-kind shops and homegrown goods, Nashville's eclectic neighborhoods offer retail therapy with southern flair. Among the city's shopping hotspots is Marathon Village, housed in a group of warehouse buildings where a car called the Marathon was built in the early 1900s. Today, distressed wood floors and exposed brick walls surround shops like Antique Archaeology and Bang Candy Company. Their signature chocolate-dipped marshmallows come in flavors like rose cardamom and maple bacon bourbon. Next door, Jack Daniel's opened its first brick-and-mortar store outside Lynchburg in summer of 2016. Hats, T-shirts, and coasters share space with memorabilia and even commemorative guitars. For filling your closet and your home, stop in the stylish 12 South neighborhood. Now, you have a custom pair of jeans made at Imogene and Willie, housed in an old gas station, or you can browse the funky mix of merchandise at White's Mercantile, owned by Hank Williams' granddaughter. It's billed as a general store for the modern-day tastemaker. And then finally, there is the music scene. We have to check that out. They don't call it Music City for nothing. While country may get most of the acclaim, other genres have a place there, too. Take the Nashville Jazz Workshop, tucked away in an industrial area of Nashville's Germantown neighborhood. Its intimate performance space, located in what was once a fallout shelter, is ranked among the world's top 150 jazz clubs, with shows on Friday and Saturday nights and jam sessions on Sunday. If classical is more your style, the Nashville Symphony presents some 130 concerts each year at the Schermerhorn Symphony Center. The 10-year-old building is a marvel of acoustical engineering with movable banners and panels that can be adjusted to best suit the acoustics of different musical genres. It's one of the reasons they say there is no bad seat in this house. The Schermerhorn is also one of the world's only concert halls to use natural light, which is filtered through 30 soundproof windows. So lots to do in Nashville, Tennessee, also known as Music City. So, anyway, as we move along and our eclectic choices of places to go, if you feel you need to keep your travel destinations closer to home, then this next travel story might prove helpful. Writer Sam Boykin is going to tell us about the charming blend of historic preservation and natural beauty that awaits visitors on North Carolina's coast. His article's called Knott's Island, which was found in the spring of 2021 issue of AAA Go magazine. Established in 1668, Currituck is one of the state's five original ports. In the early 1800s, the county became known for its peaceful fishing villages, which continued to grow and thrive after the Albemarle-Chesapeake Waterway, known today as a portion of the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway. It opened in 1859. By the late 1800s, wealthy industrialists began flocking to Currituck County for its diverse wildlife and numerous hunt clubs. Today, Currituck has something for everyone: outdoor adventures, family-friendly activities, and historic attractions. Among Currituck County's top destinations is Knott's Island, situated just south of the Virginia border. To visit, guests can take a free ferry that operates between Knott's Island and Currituck on the mainland. Now we talk about a hunting heritage. Continuing its proud history of hunting, Currituck County often offers enthusiasts the opportunity to hunt such wild game as ducks and deer. Waterfowl hunting is especially popular in the area, with a variety of species and habitats ranging from open water and marsh estuaries to grassy flats. For expert guidance, there's the Swan Island Hunting Club, which offers guided hunting trips to its members. It was founded by a group of New York hunters in the 1870s. Early members purchased land and converted a farmhouse into a clubhouse. Over the years, the house burned down and was rebuilt several times. The house standing today was completed in 1914. Other accommodations include Sandy Point Resort Campground, which has full RV hookup sites, tent sites, and waterfront log cabin. Another option is Barnes Hunting Lodge, where hunters have been staying since the 1920s. The lodge can accommodate up to 10 people and offers home-cooked meals and hunting guide services. And then we have some majestic mustangs for you to view. A visit to Currituck Outer Banks wouldn't be complete without seeing the area's wild horses. Descended from the Spanish mustangs that early explorers brought to the Outer Banks, generations of Corolla wild horses have roamed across the Currituck Outer Banks for some 400 years. The horses are so culturally significant to the area that the state designated the Spanish Mustang as the official state horse of North Carolina in 2010. Now, one of the best ways to see them is with one of the area's tour companies, which bring visitors to the four-wheel drive areas of the beach and where horses can typically be found. You can't feed or pet the horses. It's illegal to come within 50 feet of them. However, the tours are a fun way to get close enough to take pictures of these majestic animals. There's also the Wild Horse Museum in the historic Corolla Village, which has displays, exhibits, and during the summer offers children's activities. Then we have outdoor attractions. There are many ways to explore Knott's Island's natural beauty. McKay Island National Wildlife Refuge is a 9,503-acre national wildlife refuge and home to varied species of fish, birds, flowers, and native plants. Named after the famed broadcast journalist, the Charles Kuralt Trail winds through varied habitats, including tidal freshwater marsh and pine flatwoods. Now, we have nature lovers also will enjoy the Currituck Banks Reserve, located just north of Corolla. Visitors can stroll through 965 protected acres of natural maritime habitat with trails that wind past beaches, sand dunes, maritime forests, and marshes, and get a whole new perspective on the area by climbing the 220 steps to the top of the Currituck Beach Lighthouse, a beacon since 1875. This majestic red brick lighthouse provides expansive views, of the Currituck Sound and Atlantic Ocean and the northern Outer Banks. So that's worth the climb, I guess. So just remember, it's 220 steps if you need to count. And then finally, some water fun. The beaches here offer plenty of sand, surf, and sun. Many beachgoers might just require a comfy lounger, good book, and tasty beverage to enjoy the day. More active visitors will enjoy places like Coastal Explorations, and they offer kayak and SUP tours and rentals where you can explore islands and marshy mazes. And if you're seeking adventure, well, Corolla Kiteboarding offers a variety of lessons for this fun and exhilarating sport that harnesses the power of wind to surf across the ocean. And with the area's barrel waves and frothy breaks, Currituck is also a good spot for surfers of all ages and skill levels. So, boy, there is a lot to do down in Currituck County, right there on the Outer Banks. If you ever wondered what it's like down there, this would be a great way for you to enjoy the Outer Banks, taking a trip down to Currituck. And, wow, just so much going on in North Carolina. Every time I open up a different story, I'm reminded of things that I got to do when I was a child. I remember my dad loved the Outer Banks, and we would just spontaneously sometimes on a weekend, he'd say, okay, let's go fishing, and we'd do it. And usually we ended up at Kitty Hawk or somewhere nearby there. But since we got across the bridge, I'd grab a crab line, one of these little things that was kind of like four popsicle sticks glued together with a fishing line and a hook, throw that thing over and watch it bob in the waterway there and try to catch something. I don't recall if I ever caught anything, but just the fun of watching and being there. And there were always folks fishing from the bridge, from the shore, and of course there were guys who had boats behind their vehicles, and they'd stop by to see how we're doing and say, well, we didn't catch much either. But it was good camaraderie and lots of fun, and that certainly brings an end to our fun today on Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And I need to remind you, the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. You'll also find past episodes there as well, if you like. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.